listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographers Series 2025. Artistic Direction, Brianna O'Mara and Chris Haring. The series is co-funded by the European Union in the frame of Lifelong Burning, Futures Lost and Found. Today's guest is Guy Bebe, whose work I Have Such a Horrible Voice was invited to this year's Attention series. Guy talked with me about precarity, how easily one can get in debt, and what this does to a person. She talked about starting a lot of things but not finishing them, about taking risks, and the blurry area between life and art. My name is Almut Kreser, and it was my pleasure to chat with Guy. Hello, we are back at Mumok at our pop-up exhibition, and right now next to me is Guy Bebe.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm happy to meet you here. You are an artist based in, and you might have helped me again with the pronunciation.
Montreal,
yes. But there's also, it's called Tjokjake Munyang. It's written in your...
Because Montreal is the colonial name of the city, so...
Can you tell me the actual name? Because it sounds beautiful.
It's Tjokjake Munyang, yeah.
Tjokjake Munyang.
Yeah.
Okay, so I learned something new when I read your bio, because I've not heard of this in this colonialized world. you are an artist based there in Canada, and you are doing quite experimental performances.
Yeah.
Maybe start at the very beginning. What was for you the start of being an artist? When did you decide for yourself, this is what you're going to do? Or how was there some event that made you think, oh, this is what I'm going to do? Or was it just totally natural and always clear that performance art is what you're going to dedicate your life to?
Oh, it's a good question, because sometimes you forget about the sources of the why you choose this crazy medium, you know? I study, we say art visuel in French, but we can find art, or like this is what I studied at first. But I always been interested with theater and dance and when I was younger. So it's really weird because I met people at school and they were organizing like a workshop, but that was more like, we say in French, auto workshop. It was like workshop that we self-organized together in like waste field in the city. So we were having like a lot of find object, and we were doing some exercise in the space. Mm-hmm. So we really learn together. A practice, in a sense. I start like, I don't know why, but I start to do performance in my class that was not performance, but I start showing performance in this context. And then after I start also showing performance in a DIY event, underground event, and I feel, I don't know if I choose the practice or if the practice choose me. I don't know what, like, and then I don't know. It's really, I met people, I did other workshop, and then I chose this practice also because it was pretty easy and not expensive to do. Like, it's just my body and like object and like, you know, text. And so it was like really more direct for me, you know. I will like work with improvisation and everything. But it became really something that was necessary for me. It was like, it became like not just like a practice, but it became my life also. And the way I was doing relationship with others and the way I was experiencing the world and the way I was like digesting also the things around me. But I don't, I'm not from dance and I don't come from theater also. I come from fine art, but we have like, so I bring my fine art methodology into my practice, but also dramaturgy. And so like, I don't know if I answered the question, but yeah.
Yeah, it gave a good impression to me. And that you are also busy with fine art is visible in your piece, I would say. I mean, in the objects. You do your costumes yourself, right? And I mean, they are art objects, I would say. That's how I perceive them. The piece you were invited to the Attention series is called I Have Such a Horrible Voice.
Yeah.
How did you start this project? What was the beginning of it and how did it end up being what it is now?
Oh yeah, oh my gosh, it's a good question. It's been 3 years I'm working on this piece in different, I don't know what is the word in English for that, but step of creation. Mm-hmm. Maybe three version of it before it looks like the version you saw. Yeah, it's a piece that is about a really specific subject also. It's about debt, like financial debt. Mm-hmm. So at a moment where it was really like debilitating for me and really like hard and intense, I was in a really hard and intense moment of like debt and precarity, and I thought it was something that was like collectively share and but that we didn't talk about really much. And then I did have like someone in my family that make a bankruptcy. Yeah, this state of like this constant stress and this constant not harassment but always being called to like give money, all these things create symptoms that I experience in life, you know, lying to my friends, lying to myself, you know, continuing like, so I was like, why, what if I transform this experience into art piece, you know? And I was like, I start by writing text, you know, and then after I thought about like, what can I bring? Because I work with object, like I'm performing with object. Objects are really important for me. And it's all find object also. It's all like object that I find in the street or mm-hmm. like that friends give me or so. Did I transform also, like, you know, to create shoes and costume and things that are like constraining or create something with my body? Yeah, I start to reflect about like creating a space where I'm putting myself some danger in a way, like a system like encourage me to be in debt, you know, like there's this system that want us to be in this situation, but yeah. It's also a system that make us choose this, you know, so this is their fault also, like that create also culpability. And
you refer to, let's say, I don't know, you get a study fund and you start studying and you get this money that you have to pay back then. And
yeah.
That's one of the reasons why a lot of young people are in debt, for example, right?
Yeah, and also credit and like, you know, not knowing how to deal with money. Also, my parents didn't give me the knowledge of dealing with money. You know, like there's this kind of thing also being young and like moving into a big city and then like experiencing life. And then, I don't know, I'm not even able to put words on where I put this money also, you know, like sometimes it's really abstract.
Yeah.
And I put myself in a really hardcore debt situation, you know.
Mm.
So yeah, I wanted to like transform this symptomatic trauma induced by capitalism, I will say, you know, like that we don't think about also because we normalized it,
yeah.
You know. So I really wanted to transform it into like a ecstatic and life force erotic experience and to be like, oh, I can like switch this thing and reclaim my guilt and reclaim my and surrender also. And, you know,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
Because it is very easy to get into debt and it is very easy to want things one can't afford because we are in this capitalistic society where every corner wants to sell you something and is has attractive things that you want and then you end up there. And that's the danger you talk about, right? The danger of getting wanting more than one can afford and then eventually also getting more than you can afford is very easy. And that's this temptation, the danger that you refer to. Did I get this right?
Yeah. And also this kind of like, I talk about vicious fate at some point where like I'm talking about the fact that if you forget the debt, you're just restoring credit. So you restore the potential of debt. So you're always in this kind of like circle of like, you can always put yourself in the same situation. Mm. Yeah, you're always at risk. And I was really interesting also about what it creates in my body. So lies. And then also it destroys friendships for me. And you know, that can apply to relationship, family. And also with like your body. Yeah. I wanted to also create a space where there's so much thing, there's so much object and so much dangerous thing, I will say, because they are not really dangerous, but they are dangerous.
They are.
They are dangerous because the first night I cut myself here in Vienna and there were blood everywhere.
I was right in front of you and I was afraid I might faint. This was a very extreme experience for me because in this kind of performance situation, you're not sure, is this on purpose? Is this now a play drama? Is it real? It seemed very real and there was blood dripping almost like on my shoes, sort of. And this puddle of blood was building up in front of my eyes and I was totally overwhelmed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it really like tanked your experience, but it was really my fault, you know. It never happened before. It's just because I pushed something that I was not supposed to push, but it fit in the dramaturgy, I guess.
I mean, it fits very well to also what you explained now, because it seemed very dangerous to me. And I realized, thinking back about the performance, that I was, for the rest of the time there, very concerned about you. I was like, don't do something else, but you can get hurt. And you did a lot of things where I thought you could get hurt. And my nerves were really wrecked afterwards because I was, I was worried about you. And it was an intense feeling. I mean, it somehow felt like this fits for this performance and this topic also, because it is something your story also would invoke, I would say, would evoke in me this feeling of, I wish you good. I wish you to not fall deeper into some whatever hole it is.
Yeah.
Injuries or debt or bankruptcy or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, but also that this was really, I know where everything is in the space. It's the piece that move with me also, like the space move with me. So it doesn't seem like this, but I know where I put everything. Mm. So I can see everything, even if I have a mask on my head and even if I, so for me, it's not really dangerous, but for the audience, it can be really overwhelming, I think. But it was also danger that I put myself there. So it was also like the question of the guilt, putting myself in this dangerous situation. And I'm trying to manage the space. It's a piece where I try to start a lot of things that I don't finish. Also, like this is kind of unproductive. Also, I'm possessed with kind of like different character, different ghosts, but I'm still myself. So for me, it's kind of this multiplicity of objects that create this artificial sovereignty. It looks like I have the control because I have a lot of objects, but the objects are a danger for me. But I choose them, but I love them, but also they are dangerous.
There is this sort of chaos on stage, and one does feel like to you this is not a chaos, to you this is all in a certain logic, things coming up suddenly from out of nowhere and they make sense at this moment. So
yeah, and there's also the sound designer that perform with me on stage, and the song is really fixed also, so we have like this element there that is more, I will say, more secure, this sense of security with the sound design. I don't know if it makes sense. So for me, and having someone also on stage with me and having my production assistant, they were really a character of the performance. I love like that people are like, but who is this person you talked? I don't know. Like, I feel this is a piece where maybe people think I'm crazy or something.
I mean, the fact that he's called Anno, right? Your production person. Anno is in the audience and then they appeared on stage. I think the first time they appeared was there was something broken as well.
Yeah.
And but the fact that they sit in the audience makes it sort of like getting back to reality, because this person is not a performer. This person is in the audience, yeah. But then they get a performer because they constantly have jobs to do on stage.
Yeah.
Something else that came up in my mind when I thought about your piece was, I mean, talking about all the depth and the insecurity about it, there is this narrative of artists being poor, and in order to be able to make good art, one has to be poor and suffer. And this, you know what I'm referring to? Does this mean anything to you? Was this something that you considered when you thought about this piece?
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's kind of a myth for me, you know, like the fact that an artist needs to be poor to do art, you know? So, yeah, maybe there's a comment on this, or there's a even like an exaggeration of on this. But in Canada, the art context is really difficult. We usually put ourselves in debt to do art also. For more independent artists like me, it's really hard to live. I would prefer not being poor to make my heart. But I don't think being poor make my heart better. This is the question.
I mean, that's a narrative that I thought about when I read or reflected on your performance. I'm not saying this is true. I don't believe so. I mean, yeah. Life is not better when it's hard. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But I was wondering if you considered this.
It was really important for me that I not spend too much money on the production of the piece. So this is why it's all found object. And the glass piece also, I met someone and we became friends, and she's a glass blower. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I have object in my studio that I made in the past and they don't serve any purpose for the moment. So maybe if you want to explore with them in a performance, you can come and take one, and it can break, and you can do whatever you want with it. So you can come to my studio and we will see. And I did go to their studio and I watched the object, and I say, I think I will take everything. And I will put them in, because I was preparing this piece in the same time. And I was like, I think I will put them in my... They really touched me, and I think glass really touched me, like material. And for me, it was really like queer. It's cold and hot, you know, you need to burn it. It's liquid but solid. It's fragile but really not fragile in the same time, you know. And it's translucent but also opaque. It's like everything in the same time.
A lot of contradictions in one material.
Yes, and you can reuse it also. And you have also the question of like who did it. Also this relation with object, it's really important. And it's something we forget sometimes in this capitalist system, like who make the object, you know. Mm-hmm. And with who are we in relation when we like have an object with us? So it became the collaboration, actually. So now the object followed me. Sometimes I break some of them. It's part of like bringing glass on stage, and I know it's really not like something usual. And people here in Vienna, they were really like really stressed about it, more than in Montreal. So, and I didn't expect that. Sometimes they don't serve any purpose on stage. They're just there to like, I don't know, haunt me or like being with me, you know. And like, I love touching them. They really like comfort me. And I have also like shoes that I cut and like I put knife on. Like there's some like really construction of object also that I wear. So this kind of like high and low, you know, mm-hmm. glass blow. It's like kind of like fancy, we'll say. But my other objects are kind of like DIY. But I think I have this thing also in the sound design. I have like pop culture, pop song, but also like experimental things. So I love to like reconnect high and low culture. And for me, it's something that is really trans. This cross genre also, to play with fantasy and Disney and like the princess and the hunter and you know.
I want to repeat here that to me, the shoes especially did not seem cheap and dirt stuff. Like, they really are impressive artworks. They are sculptures themselves. Yeah, I needed to add that because you made yourself a bit small here on your shoes. I think they were.
Yeah.
They're not cheap.
Oh, yeah, it's true, yeah. And then I did talk about too much thing after, but yeah, there's this thing also in the piece, like, that was really important for me. It was like to create this kind of fantasy world also, you know? So I'm a princess, and then there's the musical, and there's this kind of like, you know, all the time, like, it, and it's also, it's a body horror thriller, but also, you know, so this, for me, this cross genre was really important. In the piece, to like summon desire and summon ghost and like, I don't know. Yeah.
How did the collaboration with you and the musician,
Jad.
Yeah. You said you started already 3 years ago, sort of, to work on this project. What was the point when
she
came in? When did Jad come in and how did you work together?
Yeah, it's, at first I didn't work with a sound designer. I was doing everything myself, but at some point I was like, the sound is really my limit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not really not my, I can do, you know? And we actually met in Montreal. I felt that we have the same sensibility. Like she's a great musician. She's also have like a music project that I really liked. And then I asked Jad to enter in my world and that we will see if it will work together, you know, because it's, I have a lot of idea in my head that it's hard for me to explain sometimes. And then we really work with, like, I was describing emotion or scene or, like, I was like, I want to have, like, a Disney screamo song. And then, like, after, she's like, okay, give me, like, a little bit. And then we, like, built the piece, the song of the piece together, like it's really a collaboration and like she's really listened to me, but it's also like a piece that is really structured. There's like a story. It can seem improvised, but it's really like there's a lot of like climax and then, oh no, it's not the end. And then there's, so the sound, yeah, it was really natural. And now we work together for other project. I felt I love their presence on stage also, and this kind of like awareness. She's really looking at me, and it became really a duo because the sound is really important, in my opinion, in the piece.
I also really like the connection between the two of you.
Yeah,
she was very caring, concentrated on you, and then looking at you and doing all the things, and it fits so well, so perfectly to what you did. But another question that I had anyways is how much of this show is structured and how much is improvisation? Because you said it's more than one would think, which is structured.
I learned performance with improvisation, you know, so it was really important for me. But I wanted to have like a more fixed and more, I will say, restrained dramaturgy for this one. I have a score, and then I rehearsed it a bit, but I'm not like the biggest rehearser also, you know, but I needed to rehearse because I don't want to like, because of the dangerosity of it. But more I know the piece, more I improvise in it. It's really like because each scene I do it differently each night. Usually the voice is really improvised, like the what's going out of my mouth and like the you know, like the breathing, the screaming, the voice. It's like I need it to go out when it needs to go out. But there's things that are really structured. I don't do the same each night, even if it's the same scene. Sometimes I'm like, I'm starting something, I'm like, I'm too tired tonight, I'm gonna stop now. I'm like, I can finish this one and I'm gonna continue, you know. So I'm giving this also like, it's really open, so I can choose, I can take decision. Like, this is because the structure is really, it's so structured, so I can take the decision to just remove something.
And it makes sense that the more you know, the better you know the piece, the more you have made it, that you improvise more because you feel more secure and you know it better, and it feels more, I mean, makes sense somehow.
Yeah, and the first night was here, was really, really like I felt new thing in the piece, because I was not before this piece, I was not used to repeat the same performance two times, mm-hmm. three times, and now it's like I did it 9 times now after here, and I really discovered the joy of like the familiar. And like this kind of like a static moment of like knowing what you're gonna do, and this kind of like moment where you can like just think about something else and be in your body. And like, so I thought it was the best version here. I did really have fun, and yesterday was amazing. The audience was laughing and was really there with me, and then it was like a really great experience, because at first I was really stressed, because I don't do dance, but it's movement, you know, but I'm not from dance, and I've been invited here by Brianna and Chris to present in 8 Tension, and I was like really okay, but what is it gonna be well received, you know, because it's not dance, but it's choreography in a sense, you know. So I was like really like I didn't know why Brianna invited me, and like it was like a real like fight inside myself, but I did like all my friends was like, you need to do it, and then yeah, so I'm here in Vienna and I present this, but yeah, I'm really happy about the experience. And
great, I'm also happy your friends convinced you. Yeah. I mean, we would have missed out on something. But you mentioned already that you had been here not only to present, but that's the thing about the attention. It's this collaboration between the festival and between the network Lifelong Burning,
yeah.
where I work for. The festival invites you to show your piece, and we invite you to not just hop and drop and show your piece and be gone, but to actually spend time at the festival, do a residency here, stay here, yeah. work on something totally different if you feel like it. And I'm curious, how did you spend your time here? What did you do? Did you use the studio, or did you do workshops, see performances? How did you spend your time?
I saw 6 or 7 shows. That is kind of a lot.
Wow.
Yeah. And I still have 2 shows to see, one tonight and one after tomorrow. And then we used the studio for the piece, actually, because I needed to go back to the material. So we used the studio with Arno to just really work through the movement and work through the piece and add new things. And like, so that was really fun. Mm-hmm. Sadly, I didn't have time to do workshop. I was really concentrated on my piece, but it's really nice to being able to take times to be here. I was able to rest, I was able to meet people, to create connection, and to see shows that, yeah. And also, like, Jade saw shows also, you know, like, we are, like, together in this, walking in this really, like, this huge imperial city, like, it's really, I mean, it's really beautiful, but also really overwhelming and over the top, so it was really something for me that I didn't travel a lot in my life, so yeah, it was really great, actually. I didn't work on a new thing, because I was like, I want to concentrate on this one, because I want it to be really, yeah, I want to feel really happy about it.
I mean, it also makes sense. Your piece is rather late in the festival, so your residency was before you played.
Yeah.
The one thing I'm curious about is, because we record this now while you're here, in August, but we're going to release these new episodes of our podcast only in autumn and winter.
Yeah.
And do you know already what you're going to be busy then in, let's say, November, December?
November, December, I don't know, but in October I will present this piece in Actoral Marseille. I don't know if you know. And then I'm going to present it in Porto, in Portugal, also in a Cervelves Foundation, or I don't know if I say it well, but, and then I'm going to present other work in Paris at the end of October also for Performissima. It's like a new performance festival in Paris. So yeah, we'll have a big October month, actually. Yeah, yeah, yeah. With this piece and other work. And then we will see after, when I present this piece the first time in Montreal 1 year ago, after the piece, I was like, I need to grieve. You know, sometimes when you do art, you you start to grieve before the piece and after, but now I get invited and I still continue to live, you know, so I don't know when I'm gonna need to like let her leave at some point. I don't know.
You mean grief in the sense of this performance is done and it's showed and it's not gonna be shown again, that sort of grief.
Yeah.
A bit similar to the grief when you, I don't know, finish reading a book and then it's over.
Yeah. Because I'm like, I'm sure at some moment I would be like, it's over. Like, you know, I need to do something else and I need to play with other things.
Well, not yet, huh?
Not yet. Not yet. No, not yet. I have quite a big autumn finally. Yeah.
I mean, and amazing places you go.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? Marseille, Porto and Paris?
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's crazy to be able to, like I said, I didn't travel a lot in my life. So the first time I travel actually was with this piece in Lausanne for Les Urbaines in Switzerland. It's a big festival there. And then now I'm here in Vienna. So it's huge also for me at this time in my life to be able to do that. It's like a privilege and it's also overwhelming and I'm really happy about it. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear. And I'm glad to hear there's much more chances to see your piece coming up.
Yeah.
And I wish you a very nice autumn then.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking your time to come here.
Yeah. So thank you for this conversation.
Thanks.
You have been listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographers series. To never miss a new episode, follow us on Deezer, Podcast Addict, Apple Podcast, or Spotify. For more artist conversations, visit our websites lifelongburning.eu and impulsdance.com.